I'm Richard Silver, and I was adopted from South Vietnam in 1974. And I came out in October, so just about 5 months prior to the actual starting of Operation Baby Lift. And then I was brought over and I flew into San Francisco, where my parents, who live in Ashland, Oregon, came down and picked me up and then traveled me back up to Oregon, where I was, where I grew up and raised.
Richard, isn't it? Richard? My husband's Richard too.
Oh, good.
That's not you. Okay.
I think he went in somewhere.
Huh?
I think he went into the
I hope he stays there. Okay, so would you tell me about how old you were during Operation Baby Lift?
I was 2.5 years old when I came over. And so, unlike some of the babies who came over who were like really born, I was one of the older kids. However, I don't remember anything other than what my parents have told me, because when I came over, I was speaking Vietnamese because of what I picked up from the sisters and those who took care of me. But retaining any memory, thoughts, visions, or even the language, I have no recollection whatsoever. I wish I did, though, because I'd be able to connect more with my heritage and have a more stronger grasp of where I came from and who I am now.
How do you, if you don't remember these recollections, then how do you know?
I know because the things that the caretakers took care.
Can you start again?
I know because those who took care of me in the orphanage was able to communicate through letters to my parents of how I was in the orphanage. They said I was a happy baby. I was always smiling and always playing. And then later in my life, I was able to reconnect with one of the caregivers who took care of me in the orphanage. And he was able to tell me more about how I was in the orphanage and how I was as a baby child and being able to interact with other kids, and that I was very, very happy. And so, based on what other people have told, that's how I can remember and what I know about what I was like when I was younger.
What is your earliest memory?
In regards to Vietnam itself, none. My earliest memory in regards to my childhood, when I came home and I started interacting with my family and it became more real that I was staying somewhere, not being shuffled around, is when I knew that my memory really started being conscious and where I could know and remember the events that started happening from the time that I came home to my new family to now.
And how old are you then?
I was 2.5, but the time that I really started remembering things, oh, I would say about few months later, let's say 3 years old.
So tell me about your family.
My family's great. I owe a lot of who I am today based off my parents. I was raised in a Christian family, and so,
Can you start again?
yeah, I was. My family's great. I owe a lot of who I am today by the way I was raised by my parents. I was raised in a Christian home, grew up in the church, and so I was always surrounded by positive influence. And my parents raised me as their own. It wasn't like, oh, okay, well, Ricky's different, so we have to raise him differently. But they took me in as, hey, he's just like the two other siblings that he already has. So I was treated equally. I got the same disciplines. I got spankings too, And so my upbringing was so positive that I was the normal kid. I didn't feel like I was any different, nor did I feel like I had to be different. So I mixed in with all my friends just like everyone else did, and no one treated me like I was different.
And describe where you lived, where you grew up.
Ashland is a lot like it is in the Mount Tabor exit area. Let me start over. Ashland is really nestled in a valley that is really pretty. It's wooded area, Southern Oregon. So, a lot of mountains, a lot of trees. The scenery there is really pretty. During the seasons, it's really nice to live there. It's a small community when I was growing up, and so there weren't a lot of minorities there. When I was growing up in grade school, there were just a few. Hand pick or hand number counting of who were all minorities, including myself. By the time I graduated, that number had doubled, if not tripled, because more Hispanics, more, you know, African American and Asian started intermixing. And then once the foreign exchange program started kicking in, more students from other nationalities intermixed. So that raised the minority status tremendously. But growing up in Ashland, as a kid, there was a lot for me to do. I would always get together with my buddies and ride around on our bikes around the neighborhood and just be outside and just try and be active.
Was there ever any racism?
You know, the only racism that I experienced was when I was coming home from school and I was walking across the parking lot. Now, this was during grade school. I heard some kid from the parking lot yell across to me, "Hey, nigger." And I looked over like, you know, who are you talking to? Because I could tell, I knew for consciously that I was not black. But to me, that didn't scar me or anything. I just kind of brushed it off. And I came home and told my mom, and she explained to me what that slang meant. And it didn't damage me. It wasn't anything that I took to heart, and it didn't crush me.
When was the first time that you recognized you were Asian?
When I started interacting with other Asians, if that makes sense. Because in my eyes, being adopted, I was raised in a Caucasian home, so therefore I had Caucasian point of view. So whenever I would interact with other Asians who looked like me, I saw them as different. However, when I looked in the mirror and I knew that I was Caucasian, I was brown, I put my hands against my mom's arms and skin color was different.
That you knew you were Caucasian?
I'm sorry, that I knew that I was Asian.
Can you start again? So when you looked at the mirror?
When I looked in the mirror and really studied my own features and then put my arm and my skin color against my mom, I knew that I was Asian. But again, I didn't let that really get to me until about 10 years ago when I graduated, that I really began to realize and understand my heritage of being Asian and being Vietnamese. Because all growing up, I've always had this Caucasian perspective because of how I was raised.
And I guess, how has that changed? Describe what the Caucasian perspective is.
Caucasian's perspective is anyone who I saw was anyone... Let me start over. Okay. My perspective of Caucasian is anyone that I saw who was not white was different. I would always look at them, meaning Asians or even African Americans, and just consciously say to myself, oh, they're different. Not realizing that I myself is different too. And so with that said, I didn't make that difference or distinguish a difference until I started going to college in Eugene. And while I was walking around the campus of the University of Oregon is when I saw a melting pot of minorities and realizing, you know, I'm not really any different than the people here, which really started to ease my comfort about who I am, accepting that I am different and that I don't have the same characteristics as a Caucasian would. And so I really began to accept who I was. And that's really when, should I say, the acceptance of my adoption, the acceptance of my heritage, of my nationality, really began to take place. And it's been a journey ever since.
How long ago was college?
College was 1990. I graduated high school in 1990. And I went to Northwest Christian College, which is across the street. And during my time there, I would go across to U of O and just sit around their campus and play frisbee or whatever. And just my being there, I love watching people. So I would just observe the different nationalities and just the people on the campus.
Did you make friends with any Asians?
Absolutely. And it's weird because even though I say that I was raised in a Caucasian home but viewed Asians differently, I was one of the first people to really interact with the foreign exchange students, whether it be Puerto Ricans or, you know, Japanese, because I knew that they were different. I consciously had something in common, knowing that I was adopted. I could have a connection. So yeah, I definitely did interact with them and treated them in a respectful manner. I didn't, you know, set them aside or have any discrimination against them.
I was just wondering, when you made friends with other Asians and you told them you were adopted, and what that reaction was from them?
I don't think at the time, especially growing up in school, they knew I was adopted. They knew what it was all about. But it wasn't like, oh, really? You're adopted? They almost like accepted me like I was just part of the family. Like, oh, okay, you're adopted. That's cool. And we went on. It wasn't really a big issue that we really harked on.
I wonder how much identity, you know, how do you find your identity? When did you want to find your identity? And, you know, did you ever have any identity issues?
I personally did not have identity issues. Well, not in the way that someone would think would be traumatic. Like I said, because of the upbringing my family had and the impact they had on me, I had no reason to be angry. I had no reason to have any harboring feelings as far as, why did you take me from my country? Why did my mom give me up? My parents did a great job with embracing me. So my identity in regards to who I was not an issue. Now, my identity in regards to today really has a big play now. And as I look back on growing up, it all is a puzzle that's starting to come together. My pursuit, should I say, or my journey to have closure or find more of my heritage began shortly after or shortly before I left Eugene, moving up to Portland. Big play with that is my sister-in-law started working on a whole international adoption agency in Eugene. And so I had many opportunities to do volunteer work inside of Holt. And being surrounded by social workers and seeing pictures and being around that environment gave me more of a spark or a fire to say, hey, you know, there is more to my adoption than just being Rick Silver, okay? But it wasn't until I started courting with my fiance, my wife, that my desire to find my identity really began. Her mother was very curious and very interested about my past.
What can I ask you? What race?
Oh, my mother-in-law, or I married a Caucasian wife, and so her being having her daughter dating someone of a different race naturally piqued her curiosity. And what actually kind of stemmed from that, let me back up a few years ago, prior to our marriage, is that my in-laws, my wife's parents, hosted a foreign exchange student from the Philippines at the same time that my wife was in the Philippines as a foreign exchange. So they had some interaction with an Asian culture as well. So my mother-in-law had a lot of questions. She started firing off the questions. When do you want to go back to Vietnam? Do you have any desire to go back to Vietnam? Do you want to know who your parents is or your mom? And so with that said, these were questions that I knew I could not avoid because I was going to be marrying her daughter, and that curiosity is always going to be around her and around me. And my wife's sister also has that same curiosity. And so it's because of those questions and her continuing asking me about my growing up has sparked me to want to continue to find more about my past. I had an excellent experience back in 2001. My wife and I got married in 95, so 6 years later. There was a Vietnamese adoptee conference up in Seattle back in 2001. And Ben's that I have never had a big surrounding of other adoptees, other than one or two growing up in school, right? I went to this with my wife, and it was amazing. There was
Hold on a second. There's a car kind of driving off. I think. Yeah.
Okay. Back in 2001, there was a conference in Seattle of Vietnamese adoptees. And so my wife and I went up there and attended that. And it was a phenomenal event, though the numbers were small because that was just shortly after the 9/11, but there was still a good turnout. It was a good eye-opener for me, and it was a big closure for where I am today. The pinnacle of my being there was when a gentleman came up to me and introduced himself to me as Ross Mader, who used to work for FCVN, which is Friends of Children of Vietnam. They were an agency that was very influential in Vietnam to get the babies out in Operation Baby Lift. And I said, well, I'm Richard Silver. I came from Vietnam through FCVN. And as we greeted each other, he said to me, you look really familiar. I was dumbfounded because I've never met this guy in my life, but yet he says to me that he has met me. So I proceeded by saying, I have my adoption papers with me, my certificate and everything. Would you like to look at that? So he said, sure, no problem. Gave him my papers. He looked at it. He looked at my passport and he goes, that's how I know you. I took your picture.
Can you say that again? That's how I know you.
That's how I know you. I took your picture. And this is Ross Mader, who took care of me in the orphanage. I was speechless. I mean, can you imagine? I mean, the anxiety and the energy that was just inside me. I just wanted to burst. But part of me still kept saying, you're in a dream, because it didn't seem real. But the more that I asked questions, the more I was able to put pieces together, because he referred to people in the home that my parents had interaction with prior to my adoption. So I knew that what he was telling me was legit and had a lot of credibility to it. After the conference, about a few months later, after the conference, he emailed me a picture of me in the orphanage with him sitting with me. And that right there was like, this is for real. And it's been an exciting ride from there on, because we had a conference, Vietnamese Adopting Network, which I'm a member of, had a conference here in Portland 2003, and he was there. And so again, we had a whole nother event to be able to catch up on old times and talk more about our experience. And it's exciting because he says to me, Rick, you are my main story that I tell people, which is exciting because he too is my story. So we have a common string that we can be able to pull each other to, and a common story that we can share with others. That's exciting. That right there was my identity. That is a closure that I have been asking all my life. Who am I? Where am I? And, you know, how did I get here? Meaning, what was I like as a baby? The questions that I can't answer. And he was able to answer a lot of those questions. And so that's really exciting. So the stories that he tells, the stories that I hear from other adoptees that I interact about their time in Vietnam, I want to go back now. And right now it's just a matter of time and money, but I will go back to Vietnam.
That's what I was going to ask you. It seems like, you know, that was such an inspiring story that, you know, it can't stop there, can it?
No. As Paul Harvey would say, that's not the end of the story. My journey still continues. And even if I do go to Vietnam, or when I do, it still doesn't end, because there's still so much to learn. I cannot wait to go back. And just at this point, to see the country. I don't have any intentions to go back with an agenda to find my family, because I don't want to have disappointments. I want to go back to at least see what my home country looked like, see the land, interact with some of the people there, and just get accustomed to what it would be like if I was in Vietnam today. And I'm talking like the old town Saigon, not one that's been more westernized. That right there will be one step towards finding out more of my past. Then when I go back again, if I go back again a second time, I may have a deeper desire to pursue more of my family ties, my biological family, to see if for any reason information was left in search for me. And then with that investigation, be able to maybe find my biological mother.
Yeah, I was going to ask you if you were going to have kids, and, you know, there's always that question of the biology, if nothing else.
that would be very interesting, exciting. I don't know if fear is the word to know that I may have brothers or sisters, which could very well be because my mother definitely, I knew that I'd been abandoned. But in the meantime, she could have moved on with her life, got in with the family, and had more kids of her own, which is very possible.
I wonder also how your parents feel about that.
My parents...
Can you start again, my parents?
Yes. My parents knew at some point that I would want to have or even have questions about my past. My mother always was open with me. She wasn't hiding anything from me. She had no reason to be reserved. She was more than willing to share what information she knew or she could release. There isn't anything confidential that has not been told to me. Like I said, they've been very open. I asked them at one point, I said, "What would you do if I found my mother?" And naturally, as a mother, she said, "I would be very sad, but very happy." But she also knew that I wouldn't just arbitrarily go back to my natural mother because my home place was home with my adopted family.
I imagine that you share a bond not just with transnational adoptees, but also just adoptees, period.
Absolutely. We all have the same story. I had an opportunity to attend a Korean event hosted by Holt here in Portland. And the question was asked to me is, you're in a room full of Koreans. How does that feel? What are your thoughts about that? And I simply replied saying, you know, I may be of a different race, different nationality, but as we all sit here in this room, we are all sharing the exact same situations and occurrences that happen in an adoptee's life. We all have the same stories. We are all adopted. So naturally, we're going to experience some similarities with dating, growing up in a different home, being around different people. So I view other adoptees on a common level, regardless to nationality. We all have the same experience and stories, and we can all gain and learn from something from each other.
I was also thinking of Caucasian adoptees, you know, as well. I mean, there's similarities.
Absolutely. Domestic, Caucasian. In fact, I have a lot of good friends who are Caucasian, who are adopted, who they feel really connected to me because, again, they feel like they have a connection. They don't feel different because someone else is adopted who may experience the same things they do. Now, they won't experience the racial issues, but not having the same biological traits or genes.
I was also wondering if because you live in Oregon, anybody has asked you, where are you from? I mean, just strangers or, you know, when they first meet you.
Absolutely. I tell them I'm from Ashland, but when I get down to the root of their question,
Repeat the question for me.
When people ask me, where am I from? I just comically say off the cuff, I'm from Ashland. But when I get to the root of where they're trying to go with, I tell them that I am from Saigon and that I was adopted and I came over. Because I know that when they see me with either my family or interacting with some of my friends who aren't of my race, being Vietnamese, they're naturally curious. And so they want to know how I encountered with my friends and people.
And again, since you live in Oregon, have there ever been any problems with you and your wife as an interracial couple?
No. And that's really interesting that you asked that because I get that question a lot. However, the trend or the society has changed so much that if you were to ask me that 30 years ago, yes, that would have been a hot issue. But now today, it is so common that interracial marriages, relationships, friendships, it's almost to a point where it's uncommon not to see that. You know, by that I've seen Caucasians with African Americans or vice versa. So no, I don't get that at all.
What advice do you give for, I guess, people who have been adopted or other adoptees who are just kind of feeling out of it, like you said, different?
It is okay to feel that way, and it's natural.
Can you repeat my question?
Repeat your question again.
Again. That's redundant.
I guess my words of wisdom for someone who may feel that they're different would be, it's okay to feel that way. I don't think you wouldn't be human or you wouldn't have true feelings if you don't feel that way, because you are placed in a totally different situation and environment. However, I would also encourage anyone who struggles or have roadblocks to explore why you feel that way and get those questions answered, because there is a reason as to why you have been adopted. There is a reason why you have been placed in a different environment. But getting past that difference is going to help you move along and help you become who you are.
Would you and your wife ever adopt?
We talked about that, actually. And we would love to do that. However, we have two boys who are both 8 and 5. And so we're getting to a point where they're getting to that age where we don't want to bring in a younger one where there's such a big age gap. And I say that because I'm the youngest of three, and my next oldest is 6 years older, and my oldest is 9 years older. And so you lose that big fluctuation gap, and you lose that continuity with your kids. That, and I don't want to be 6 years before my last kid is out of the house. We have talked about adoption. I have that desire to adopt, but I think we're getting to a point where we have to consider and be happy with the boys that we have.
I just wondered, do you know any other adoptees who've adopted? I'd never thought of that before.
Oh, absolutely. And they've adopted because they want to be able to pass on what they have been given. However, those who have adopted also adopt because of other circumstances of which is beyond their control.
Right. So I thought that would be interesting to connect with somebody who's adopted, though, as an adoptee. Because it seems like they would have a special insight.
Absolutely. They can be able to pass on and definitely say, hey, you know what? You may not understand this now, but I have been through what you are going through. But maybe you won't understand that till you get older. Yeah, I've met a lot of adoptees who have adopted themselves.
Oh, okay, well, I'll need your help in finding them, I guess. How about when your parents, I mean, I know you said you looked in the mirror and you knew that you weren't the same race as your parents, but what did your parents tell you, and when did they tell you?
Again, they never held anything from me. They didn't wait till I was a certain age to tell me I was adopted. The minute I knew I was different, I asked. And they said, well, I didn't know what they said, but they basically explained to me, they explained to me why I was, as you would call, different. Why am I not white? And why am I placed in this family? And they were more than open to tell me that, whether I was 4 years old or even now, I still ask the same question, just as a reassurance and affirmation of who I am, because I always need that. But they were always, from the very beginning that I could ask, was open with me.
And since, I mean, I feel that you have this, you know, you have a great love for your parents. I wonder, what exactly were those circumstances for them to adopt? Okay.
You want to ask that again?
Yeah. What were the circumstances for your parents to adopt you?
They felt sorry for me. No, I'm sorry.
It was a pity thing.
What my mother has told other people, they haven't said this to my face.
That was funny.
But they told my wife's grandmother, and I quote, "They adopted you, Ricky, because they felt like they wanted some spark and a change in their family. When they adopted you, they got that, because their life has not been the same ever since." Though if that's the truth, then that's a great answer. However, I think they wanted to add one more to the family and add another part of a different environment. when I was growing up, they were talking about adopting another child from Korea. That never panned out because the mother wanted to keep her daughter.
I mean, they had to go through a long process to get you, didn't they?
It took them about 16 months from them. And back then, of course, you know, they're hand typing everything. Because I'm 30, I'll be 33 this year. So yeah, we're talking 30 years ago. They're hand typing letters and snail mailing everything. And so
did they actually go over to Vietnam?
They actually went over to Vietnam because at that time...
Well, can you start again? They actually...
Yeah, they were actually... The letters were actually going over to Vietnam because Sherry Clark, who was running the FCVN orphanage in Vietnam, was able to correspond with my father saying what a great child I am, how active and how happy I am. So she was being able to tell in the letter firsthand what the child that they were adopting was like.
Do you have those letters?
I do. And I didn't bring them.
That's okay. I, since you guys are neighbors, maybe I'll have Sarah come over and record you reading some of the letters.
Do you mind? Yeah.
It would be kind of interesting.
Traffic is tough across the highway.
That way she doesn't have to come into work. You know?
Make sure you still get paid, okay?
Is there anything else you want to add to what we've been talking about?
I would say for anyone who is adopted, it's just to, I don't want to say embrace it as a...
Embrace your culture.
Embrace your love. Go hug a tree. Really take heart as to who you are and your heritage, because your heritage, whatever nationality you are, is so much of who you are when you grow up. And the family that you are raised in also has a big play in who you are as a sibling, as a parent, even cousins, because they are the ones who literally help mold who you are. And a lot of that is based upon your parents and your brothers and sisters. For those of you who want to adopt, I would say my words of wisdom is to raise your child as your own. Don't go make the effort of setting them apart by making them feel different, but raise them as your own, like you had them right from birth.
Have you known other adoptees who say, well, you know, I don't want to know my heritage. I don't want to go there. You know, I was raised white. That's what I am.
Absolutely.
Really?
Absolutely. I've met a lot of adoptees who are across the map from one spectrum to another. Adoptees saying, you know what, right now, I don't care. I don't have any questions. I don't even want to even talk about it. To the other extreme, to adoptees are just spilling their guts, you know, just telling about their story and wanting people to either relate or just be a sounding board for what they have to share. Either way, there's going to be a point in your life where you have to recognize who you are, whether it be at 40 years old, whether it be at 29 years old. There's a point where you're going to realize, I need to have some of these questions answered. It's a journey, and it's a process that it is a journey, and it is a process that is a case-by-case situation.
Anything else?
May the force be with you.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
That's great.
In regards to the adoption and the process, in regards to snail mail, today's adoption process is much more easy.
Hold on a second.
In regards to the adoption process that my parents went through, like I said, it was all snail mail and everything was correspondence in the longest way possible. Today's adoption process is so much easier. Number one, you have all the medical records provided for you. All the birth records are easily accessible, however, still kept in top secret based upon confidentiality. And three, the parents who are planning to adopt now have the option to go to the country. In fact, in some adoption processes require that one or both parents go back to the country for 2 weeks, come back, and then when they're ready to pick up their child, they go to the country. Whereas 30 years ago, or even 15 years ago, the social workers or the agencies brought the child to the airport where the child would be going to. So that's a big difference of then and now. Shortly after the Iraq War started, mm-hmm. the whole scenario of, is Vietnam happening all over again? Because now kids of Iraq are, you know, being set up for adoption. and now with the whole situation in Indonesia and the tsunami situation. So adoption is a never-ending process.
Yeah, I was wondering about that with the Iraq War. Are we looking for more, you know, are there going to be more refugees, more adoptees?
You know, that's, yes. I just hope that the purpose behind it isn't in the wrong sense, whether it be a political thing or a status thing. There was a thing in the article that Angelina Jolie was adopting a couple of the kids, and you know what I'm talking about. She did it for a whole political, not political, excuse me. It's almost like a celebrity see me kind of thing. And I,
for, she already has some Cambodian babies too.
Exactly. And for me, that to me is the wrong motive for adopting children. I would want to be adopted or adopt because I want to love a child and raise them with love and not as a status quo or any political purposes.
I think there's a lot of that going on too. And I, you know, I'm just wondering about, we did some interviews with some Chinese girls, and you know, if you grow up in a place like San Francisco where you have a lot of other adoptees like you, I think that's a different experience than say in the Midwest. Or I'm thinking also, I don't know if you ever saw Daughter from Da Nang, you know, in that tragic experience, you know?
Yeah, Daughter of Da Nang was a situation that could have been avoided, but still, the situation was real. I wish for the main character that she was prepped to know what to kind of expect. I think the reality of her family in Vietnam to expect a monetary support, that probably was not able to be avoided. But for her to know that they may be approaching her could have prepped her and have given her some ability and time to prepare for that, so she knew how to counteract that versus being thrown to the wolves and having this situation sprung on her with no warning. That threw her for a tail loop.
Do you know if any of the, like, Van, did they contact her or did anybody after that to, you know, to explain things?
I have no idea.
Yeah. Okay, well, that has nothing to do with... Why don't you just say, you know, the whole thing, who you are again, and then where, you know, where you are.
Okay.
What you're going to read, and go ahead.
I'm Richard Silver, and we are at home at my residence here in Sherwood. And I want to read a few excerpts from a document that my mother wrote up shortly after she adopted me. I'm going to read several paragraphs, and this is the first paragraph. Now, our excitement and anticipation really grew. The reason for our planning and expectation now had a face, and what a good-looking boy, and age. He was 2 in April, which meant that all the children's birthdays would be in April, and a new name, Richard Viet Silver. It was so natural to make plans for when Ricky gets here. All summer, while I worked in the garden and canned, I wondered, will Ricky like what I'm canning? It's funny, but as we waited for Ricky's arrival, the things like, will we be able to love him, or will we be able to communicate with him, never entered our minds. Wasn't Ricky created by the Lord's love, the same as our own two homegrown children have been? How could we help but love him? Even though Ricky was now speaking Vietnamese and would be coming to a strange language, that is not the only means of communicating. Besides the Vietnamese, he would be speaking would undoubtedly be baby talk. So there wasn't much point in our learning Vietnamese before he came. Paragraph number 2. All of a sudden, we started getting a little apprehensive. Are we really doing the right thing for our family and for Ricky? Is it fair to take him out of his own environment and sit him down completely in a new country where language, culture, food, weather, etc., are all new and strange? Most of all, will he like us, learn to love us? That had been our prayer ever since Ricky was selected. We had been preparing our hearts, our lives, our home for him, and had already started loving him. But as little as he wasn't able to do that. He had seen our pictures in the FCVN center where he had been seen. where he had been since August. But the concept surely couldn't have gotten through to him. He would be leaving. The world he would be leaving. Okay, let me start that sentence over. He had seen our picture in the FCVN Center, where he had been since August, but the concept surely couldn't have gotten through to him the world he would be leaving. He would have to adjust to a new member of the family, but he would have to adjust to being in a family, a new country with a new language and everything.
Do you know why she wrote this and when she wrote this?
She wrote this because, one, she wanted to document the process, as well as her and the family's emotional preparedness and process that they went through. It was a great feat for them in some respects because they were getting down to the wire, as the document explains, that they were getting to the point where they didn't know if they were going to get a call back from the agency as to saying, your baby boy is coming. And so emotionally and just nerve-wracking, they were like, the anticipation was just building and building. And so when I finally did come, she wanted to get this all on paper. Now, exactly when she wrote it, she told me 3 months, so I'm guesstimating. So I definitely know that it was within the first 6 months of me coming home. But I'm going to say 3 months because the times that she's writing here seems pretty recent, shortly after I've arrived.
When was that? What year?
It was October 31st of 1974. So I was actually five months before the actual start of Operation Baby Lift in April 2nd, 1975. Okay, so you really want me to go through a whole other paragraph?
No, you don't have to. These were just suggestions of things that I thought. I mean, if there's another section that you think is demonstrative of your...
It'd be cool if my mom wrote this poem, but she didn't, so... That's a good poem. I can't think of anything else at this point that I would see relevant in regards to adding to the material.
Sure. Why don't you show me what else you had?
Absolutely. I want to read this letter from Terry Super. She worked at the FCV home as well.
Can you start that again so I can get the...
Okay. I'm going to read a letter which was corresponded from Terry Super, who worked at the FCVN home in Vietnam as well. September 19th, 1974, Terry writes, "Dear Silvers, I have the unique privilege of knowing your son. My name is Terry Super, and I work at the FCVN Center in Saigon. Thought I might share a few insights with you about Quoc Viet. He has the most extraordinary cheeks when he smiles. They go from ear to ear. He smiles often and has become one of my favorites. We have two pools here. So far he is satisfied with the smaller rubber one but seems as though he will adjust to deeper waters easily. The exciting thing about him is his sense of wonderment. He is at that beautiful stage of discovery and enjoys every minute of it. Sure hope you will be able to enjoy him soon. Please feel free to write and ask me any questions. Sincerely, Terry Super."
That's wonderful.
So that's very exciting that my parents had an opportunity to correspond with some of the people who worked in the FCVN home. I spoke with an adoptee just the other night, who I am the first other adoptee that this person has come in contact with. And he has less documentation and less paperwork than I have. And so when I was sharing with him that I've been able to have letters from my orphanage of where I came from, he was very envious. But at the same time, I felt humbled that my parents had such a good communication line with the FCVN home.
That's
Okay, I'm going to share a hooker. Let me repeat that. In our first phase of the interview, DeMay asked me if I would ever want to go back to Vietnam. And my answer was, I would love to. But at that time, it was time and money. That was my answer, my response. And that's been my answer and response to a lot of people who have asked me that. Because in reality, that's reality. We don't have the time or sometimes the money to pay for the airfare. This is the 30th anniversary of Operation Baby Lift. And World Airways is actually the chartering airline that started the Operation Baby Lift. In June, they are taking, what am I calling it? In June, they are taking a commemorative historic trip back to Vietnam, titled Operation Baby Lift, Homeward Bound. And on this trip, they are inviting 20 adoptees to go with them. And I am one of those 20 that they've selected and invited to go. And it's really exciting because my name was chosen by name. It wasn't pulled out of a pool of applications. This wasn't open to the public, should I say. Like some places, it's like, just submit your application and we'll choose the best one. The person who coordinated this specifically asked by name, who do you know of from the FCBN who came over in Operation Baby Lift? Do you know of who would be willing to go or who could go? And the person this coordinator was talking to mentioned my name specifically and said, you need to get a hold of Richard Silver. And so the gentleman who did so gave my name and number, and we connected. And so 2 months in the making, I found this out back in January. I could not tell a word because World Airways wanted to make this public April 1st. And so come April 1st, which was Friday, the news broke. And so I knew at that point I could go ahead and share my story. And that's why I had my parents and my wife's parents together, so that way I could share the story with them at the same time. So I'm going to read this letter from World Airways. It says, Dear Mr. Silver, this April marks the 30th anniversary of Operation Baby Lift, flights from Vietnam to the United States. I'm going to start over. Dear Mr. Silver, this April marks the 30th anniversary of the Operation Baby Lift flights from Vietnam to the United States. It was a monumental day in our lives, as well as the lives of everyone who worked so hard to ensure the flights took place. On April 2nd, 1975, we flew out of Vietnam with the first orphans aboard a World Airways aircraft. In June of this year, we at World Airways will be commemorating that historic event with a special trip, Operation Baby Lift Homeward Bound, flying back to Vietnam on one of our wide-body McDonnell Douglas 11 aircrafts. As one of the adopted children from the Baby Lift flights, we are extending an invitation to you and one guest to be part of this commemorative experience. We plan to depart Oakland, California, in June, crossing the international dateline and arriving in Taipei, Taiwan, staying over, and then arriving in Ho Chi Minh City the following day. We will stay a day and a half in Ho Chi Minh City, culminating with a banquet in the Unification Palace. Special tours and other events are being planned during our time in Ho Chi Minh City. We will arrive back in Oakland on June 17th. World Airways will cover the cost of all your flights to join in Oakland, as we will provide your lodging and meals during the trip. We will require that you and your guest agree to standard background and security check as a brief interview and a brief interview with someone from World Airways prior to final approval for the trip. You may also want to know that we are closely monitoring the current avian flu situation in case it becomes prudent to alter our travel plans. If you'd like to be our guest on this special trip, please contact me. I hope that you will choose to fly with us in honor as we honor you and this historic point in time. Corporate officials and other dignitaries will be joining us as well. We will send you more complete information and itinerary and travel details after your acceptance and our final approval of your travels. Sincerely, Randy Martinez, CEO and President of World Airways. Isn't that exciting? My excuse of not having time or money is no longer my excuse. And as I was sharing to Tina last night, I'm going home, and that's exciting. So, my parents, it was excellent, you know, sharing this story, and this turn of events these last 2 months, the anticipation, because the last month we invited our parents for lunch, and my parents, because they live out of town, I can just call them and tell them, well, we just want to share with you or get back together with you, catch up on old times. My wife sees her parents every day. So for her to get out of it as easily as I could was not as easy. She had like 20 questions being fired at her. Why are we getting together for lunch? Yada, yada, yada. And so it was great to be able to finally release the news to them.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
That's just so great. So have you thought about it, planned about it? Like, have you looked at where you're going to be going yet? Or
this is a very fast trip. We are actually going to be gone for 1 week. And because World Airways is planning the trip, my obligation of going is just to be there with the group and represent United States and Vietnam and the adoptee community. And so there's a purpose of why we're going. And so I'll be able to do some sightseeing. But my intention to go there, some people are going to wonder if I want to go back and visit my orphanage, or if that opportunity arises during the time frame that we have, that would be great. But that's not my intention. It just to be able to set foot on the country I came from itself is going to be exciting.
I couldn't induce you to take a tape deck with you.
Well, you know, it's funny you say that, because I will have a digital recorder with me. And so I will take that, and I will definitely make notes and make notations as I go, and be happy to send them to you.
We'll see if that fits in, but that's just, wow.
It's going to be able to document that as I go.
So what did your parents say when you told them?
They didn't say much. They did more holding back the tears than anything else. My mother-in-law was doing great until she looked over at my mom, and they about lost it. Because my mom adopted me, that was really special. But her mom really has taken a big interest in my adoption, and so this was something really exciting for her to hear, and I can imagine she's really excited.
What do your kids think?
They're upset because we're not taking them, and trying to explain to them that.
Can you say my kids are upset?
My kids are upset because I am not taking them. They're having a hard time understanding that this is not a true vacation, like a 2 week vacation. More so than it's an important trip, a diplomatic trip where we'll be meeting some important officials that may tie a lot of relationships between the United States and Vietnam for future events. That right there is hard for them. And it's hard for me to accept that, because I do want to take them. But at this point, I also understand that this is not the right time for them to go. And it was specifically asked that no kids are allowed to go also. There's just going to be too many emotions and things going on that a young kid just will not understand.
We think that's good that they're excited about it rather than...
You know, I think they will be excited once I come home, or when the time comes closer, that they can actually say, my dad was adopted. He got to go back and visit his country. They'll probably say, now it's my turn to go. But right now, for them to be excited, they're more upset at this point, just because they don't understand the true intensity and the effect of what this all means.
Well, congratulations. That's wonderful.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm excited. And like I said, it's an honor to be handpicked like this. So I don't take it lightly.
Do you know any of the other people who are going?
Just based off of some of the rumors. I want to say rumors because I haven't seen an actual official itinerary. But there was a news press on the internet that I read where there were a couple names on the report that I recognized based off of my community with Vietnamese Adoptee Network. So there'll be one person who I will know by name, but I will be able to officially meet when we come face to face.
Great. Is there anything else that you want to read to me from your...
Well, I guess I won't share with you my felony charges or anything like that, so I'll keep that private. I'm just joking. No, actually, no. I was just going to show you some pictures and...
Sure. Tina, do you want to say anything?
I don't know.
Do you have any... Do you want to say any reaction to...
You need to sit closer to the mic if you're going to.
That's only if I'm going to say anything.
Are you going to go on this Vietnam trip?
Well, yeah, of course.
There you go.
Do you want to say what you think about going on this Vietnam trip? Don't you... You can, and then if you decide you don't want me to use any of it, you can tell me, but you can just say I'm and say your name and then tell me what you're going to do.
I am Tina Silver, and I am the wife of Richard Silver. And there's two, I have two agendas for going on this trip. One, of course, is to go with Rick to experience Vietnam, his country, his culture, things that he only got to do for 2.5 years. And as a child, you don't remember that. And so to be able to go back and just set foot, I know how excited he is. So, of course, I want to be there to experience that with him. But for me, I'm also a world traveler. And so I enjoy going to new countries, meeting new people, finding out about their culture. You know, I know some from Rick, but being growing up in an American home, it's hard to truly experience the Vietnamese culture. So I'm very excited to go do that as well.
So what do you... mother had, you know, I've been asking him about being adopted and that sort of thing. Did you have any questions about that when you were dating, or was that something you would discuss?
Yeah, when Rick and I first started dating, raising a family was something, of course, that a lot of people talk about even before they get married, because, you know, you don't want to marry somebody that doesn't want kids and things like that. So we talked about that. And then after we got married and started having kids, you know, that became very prevalent that we wanted to look into Rick's past. You know, would we find anything about his parents, especially medical things? And, you know, our chances of probably finding that are very slim. But my mom just kept pushing, Rick, you need to check into this. You need to check into this. And, you know, I was in the background going, yeah. And then he, you know, got hooked up into some different organizations. And, you know, we've just rolled on since then. So, you know, I'm glad that he's looking into his past to know what it was all about and how he plays into it today.
And what do your kids think about? Do they understand you're being adopted? Do they, you know, what do they think about? Grandma, grandpa look different? I mean, do they say these sorts of things?
We have definitely told them, you know, that daddy was adopted and where he was adopted from and how much his adoptive parents love him, you know, that he's not from them, but he is part of them. And so we've talked a lot about that, you know, because especially being a biracial couple, myself Caucasian, Rick Vietnamese, they always have questions about that, you know, about Vietnam and, hey, I'm Amerasian, and what does that mean? And, you know, all those different kinds of things. So they're definitely well-versed in what adoption means and where daddy came from and the country that he came from.
How old are your kids right now?
Our oldest son, Cameron, is 8.5, and our youngest son, Caleb, is 5.5.
So is there anything else that you want to talk
about? I don't have anything come to mind. Can you think of anything that we've talked about recently?
You had asked.
Can you read it?
Yeah. You had asked about how my kids thought about my adoption and, you know, what their understanding is they're really excited. Cameron's really excited when he tells his friends, my dad is part of Van. And Cameron asks his friend, you know what Van means? And they have no clue. He goes, oh, it's Vietnamese Adoptee Network. And so he's really excited about that because he knows who the board members are. He is associated with other kids I'm from Vietnam, and so he really likes being a part of Vietnamese Adoptee Network because I'm part of it, and I have such a strong interest and responsibility. So for that, I think he really carries on that tradition and hopefully that heritage that he too can pick up that essence of what we do with the adoption community.
Can't think of anything.
That's pretty much all I have. I don't really much have anything else. Hey, at least you can splice it all however you want.
But I can't remember if she said, somehow adoption came up that she was adopted, and so they started talking. Bree hooked Rick up with an organization. This was before Van had started. So they were going to other organizations, and then Van started, and the two of them got together and became part of Van. So it was just fate how the whole thing. And it was all because, you know, my mom's the one that's been pushing to have all this happen, and it's actually my friend who actually gets us involved in the whole thing to begin with. So it's just,
I'm not afraid to ask people what their ethnic background is. And so if I remember it right, now you're going to get two sides of the story, is I asked Bree, I go, do you mind if I ask your ethnic background? You look Vietnamese. And she said, yes. And I said, are you by chance adopted? And when she said yes, and I said, well, me too. And I'm from Vietnam as well. And so because we both had an instant connection over the dinner table, we were able to start sharing stories. And then it was later in that conversation, she said, oh, well, I just got back from the Baltimore reunion for the 25th anniversary. And it had just been a week since she had been home. So had I known that that reunion was going to happen, I would have made the effort to go back. And so it was from that point on that I had Bree submit my name to listservs and other contact with other adoptees in the community so I can start getting acquainted with other people as well. And yeah, ever since then, it's been just an enjoyable ride.
And how long ago was this?
Back in 2000.
5 years ago.
Yeah, 2000. Yes, 2000. Because it was in 2001 when I went to Seattle for the first conference. So yeah, that happened pretty fast.
So how did you two meet?
Do you want the real story or her side of the story?
The church that I grew up in Tigard, Rick's sister and brother-in-law went to church with me, and I played volleyball, so I knew who they were. And Rick had left college, and when he was going to college.
That was the dishwasher.
No, that's ice maker. Okay. Rick was in college, he had come up to spend a weekend with his sister and brother-in-law, and he had gone downtown to a music store, and with his love of music, of course, got talking to all the different people there, and they said, hey, would you like a job? And Rick goes, okay. So they almost hired him on the spot. So he went back to his sisters and said, I have a job. Can I live with you for a while? So he moved his stuff up here and started coming to church. And when I was an exchange student in the Philippines, a few years prior to that, I came home and I told my mom, I'm going to marry a Filipino. Well, I didn't marry a Filipino. I married a Vietnamese. So I was pretty darn close. You know, when I saw him, you know, it was like love at first sight. That was who I was going to marry. And so far, we've been married 10 wonderful years. So must be real love at first sight. But then you can have Rick's story if you want.
Basically, I learned real quickly not to give your phone number out. Because when I was living in Eugene, I got tired of prank calls and solicitors, so my phone number's been unlisted ever since. So when Tina asked me for my phone number, for about 2 to 3 weeks, I would not give her my phone number, and I finally caved. I said, fine, just don't give me any prank calls. So the first time she called, I wasn't home, but she left a message saying, this is your prankster friend, just calling you. So ever since then, it's been an enjoyable ride.
Yeah, it's always got to be a good story. Everyone's got a good story.
Go turn the timer.
Okay. This is my birth certificate, and yeah, it's basically on rice paper, which is a thinner type of tissue paper, if you say. I mean, yeah, I could pretty much wad it up and, well, use it as a Kleenex if I really wanted to. On this birth certificate, I think I mentioned this in an earlier portion of my interview, But about 80% of the kids who were in orphanages, their names were made up. And so though I have a name, a birth date, and basically the most important information that's needed for a birth certificate, what I'm looking here is made up. So what I've been told is that when I was left on the doorstep at the orphanage, I was found maybe a day and a half, 2 days later. And so based on what the sisters who ran the orphanage, they gauged my birth date off of how small I was and just basically my vital signs or whatever. And so April 25th is when my birthday is. That's stated on the birth certificate, but it could be earlier, you know, based on what. So this is really interesting that there's some important information on this birth certificate that I really want to do some follow-up. For instance, the sister who signed my birth certificate at the bottom, Ross Mader, who's the gentleman who took care of me in the FCBN home, knows the person who signed it, who's her name is Twee. And so I've been trying to get a hold of her so that way I can at least meet her and tell her thank you. But then the other information that's important for me is of course, where the orphanage was in Vietnam and the date and who also ran it and witnesses to my birth and of who I am. And so it shows here number 393. So I don't know exactly what that means, whether I'm the 393rd child to come through the orphanage. I would imagine that's what it could be.
Also a copy or an extract from the original, so who knows if it was...
Exactly. So there's still a lot of unanswered questions here in this birth certificate that I'm going to make a copy of this. So when I do go back to Vietnam, I'll have it with me and maybe I can get some more answers questioned. More questions answered.
More answers questioned is sort of what things usually are.
Basically, this is... Okay, my parents just happened to get a couple more extra applications for adoptions. Oh, no, these are passport applications. Okay. There's a lot of correspondence that my parents have going back and forth with the Department of Human Resources.
Now the time seems to be at hand for our getting a little girl. This is your mom writing.
What's the date on that, does it say?
January 8th, 1976.
Okay. My parents... I also mentioned this in earlier portion of the interview. After they adopted me, they also started considering adopting a Korean girl. And if my memory serves me right, the mother decided to keep the daughter. And so that's why we don't have another girl in the family. Her name would have been Su Chin Silver. There's some other cool things that my mom kept in regards to my adoption. She kept a, like what would be like a little pamphlet of the most common words that I would say in Vietnamese. So there was the Vietnamese and then the translation in English. She kept my original fingerprints. Well, that's when I came over. There's a whole, oh my goodness, I should have brought that down, a whole scrapbook of my naturalization and a whole bunch of certificates and just the whole recognition of me coming to the United States and actually getting my citizenship. So that's pretty exciting. Again, they did a lot of correspondence with different organizations to make sure this keeps flowing. So Albertina Kerr Holmes was, I think, a liaison between FCBN and my parents. So, and I have not read this whole thing quite extensively to know. So you can get that off the tape if you want.
No, it's okay.
Okay, no, actually, this is basically a bio basically stating who we are, meaning my father's writing this, and saying, you know, our family is fit to have or adopt another child. We live here, basically saying to this, to Albertina Kerr, why we should be considered to be able to adopt a child.